You know you make me wanna shout, kick my heels up and shout.
It's the Gary Knowles Show. And now, your host, Gary Knowles.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knowles, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios, New York City. For those of you who are, I'm recording live, and you can watch this program later today. It's posted, the video on YouTube, and the health and nutrition segment is posted on Facebook. We're going to talk about eating habits affecting your skin's protection against the sun. New research in the University of California at Irvine. Also, short-term use of fish oil, the omega-3 fatty acids, the DHA fraction particularly, helps prevent type 2 diabetes in people with existing metabolic problems, meaning mainly people who are overweight. This is from a medical university in Singapore. And then givers really do benefit from giving. They're happier than takers, University of Zurich, and a lot more on health and healing. Then I'm going to look at some issues that I believe are important. I'm going to address some of the questions that people attended our big premiere of Plant Coves last night. First, I want to thank our sister station, WBAI, and Andrea Katz for arranging it. Every seat was sold out. All that money, 100%, went to buy premiums. How many? About 740 premiums for the station as a whole, and not just my program. And we're sorry that a lot of people tried to get tickets late, but they were not available. In the future, anytime I do a lecture or something where I can invite you, do it early, because I've had every single lecture and premiere. I've done over 5,000 lectures and over 100 premieres in the last 40 years, packed. But I am going to be starting to answer some of the questions of people, because these are questions that everyone would benefit from. For example, in our health segment today, I'm going to answer a question. It doesn't tell me who this person is. Some do. This is a question. Gary, I have an overtaxed liver from alcohol and sugar intake. I eat a lot of meat and a lot of bad foods. But perhaps, especially from working with chemicals as a professional painter, I have sores and scaly spots on my face and have cut out alcohol. Can you please recommend a way to detox to tone my liver? I'll address that. I'll address a couple each day, because they're beneficial to everyone. Also, I have a guest in the second part of our program today, a different type of guest. This is a guest to tell us the truth about Iran. Is Iran this axis of evil that we've been conditioned and propagandized to believe? Are they really as bad as Netanyahu and others have suggested? If not, then what do they want? What can we do to live in harmony with them? Are they really trying to do a subterfuge and build a nuclear reactor, as we've been, again, led to believe? But we've been led to believe a lot of things. Remember the Gulf of Tonkin? Well, that belief that our ship, the Maddox, was attacked. No, it wasn't Maddox. It was one of our ships were attacked. It led to the Vietnam War, and upwards of 5 million people died. There are consequences to lying. The same with Iraq. Oh, they have weapons of mass destruction. They didn't. And then we have to go into Afghanistan, the longest war in American history. We didn't. The terrorists weren't there. The Taliban were. And then we have to support our allies who believe in peace. Saudi Arabia? Are you kidding me? Why don't you tell that to the gays in who are being thrown off roofs and murdered there, or the women who are raped and then they're beaten 100 times with a rod for having allowed themselves to be raped. What kind of country does this? Oh, Saudi Arabia, our ally. So you see, we're lied to every day, all the time, nonstop, by the sociopaths, psychopaths, technocrats, who are actually many me sociopaths and psychopaths, and the greedy hordes that are in this, not a swamp, it's a cesspool. You see, swamps actually can have things live in it that are not toxic, but there are predators in swamps. Cesspools have no redeeming value at all. That's Washington, D.C. So we're going to have a professor on, Professor Trita Parsi, whose father was in prison by the Shah of Iran and then was in prison by the Khomeini regime. And he has a long history in Iran. So we're going to learn the truth about Iran. You will know that. And also something concerns me. I'm seeing everyone's head explode over the idea that we have members of the Ku Klux Klan, we have racists, and we have anti-Semites, and they congregate, and that is the most important thing that our media and our government and we as individuals should pay attention to. No, it is not. We have always had lunatics. We've always had emotionally unhinged people. Now look at all the people in our society, 330 million. Now look how many members of the Ku Klux Klan, look how many haters there are. A tiny, tiny, tiny fraction of that. So if we put all of our energy into this identity politics and then start this conflict, then what happens to the other important values that we should be engaging? We don't have time or energy to do it. So I'm suggesting that we pause for a moment and look at what we're not dealing with that is far more important to our future, to our children, to our planet. That's our program today, plus time permitting. I'll throw in some audio clips and video clips that you'll be able to see, where we're going to put one more nail in that coffin that the Russians hacked the DNC. Well, we'll show you that that's not true. Also, we're going to have Dr. Gabor Mate on, talking about what is normal, and if time permits, what is the basis of a floor wage? You've never heard the word floor wage. You've heard of a living wage. You've heard of a minimal wage. We're going to introduce a floor wage today. So we pack our program. Let's begin. This is from the University of California at Irvine, and it's published in the peer-reviewed journal Cell Reports, and it says this. Sunbathers may want to avoid midnight snacks before catching some rays. A study, a laboratory study, done at the Institute, shows that eating at abnormal times disrupts the biological clock of the skin, including the daytime potency of an enzyme that protects against the sun's harmful ultraviolet radiation. And then it goes on to talk about how this finding is surprising, because no one ever thought that the time of day you would eat would impact your skin. And this is showing, well, it does. So let's just put this in perspective. What is the ultimate objective? What is our goal? To prevent skin cancer, or let's say precancerous lesions that are so common on people over the age of 35 or 40 who spend time in the sun. Now, we know that when you're eating at night, it's bad for your sleep because, in effect, it's starting the engine. You want to go from an anabolic, which is build, 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 energize, energize, to a catabolic. Slow it down, mellow it out, be at peace and ease, and go into a nice, deep, restful, and restorative sleep. Let that melatonin flow from the pineal gland, that little tiny grape seed gland in the middle of your brain, and that regulates hormones, that regulates protecting your brain and your body. And then you wake up in the morning and you're anabolic, you're thriving in energy. That's when you do your best workouts. That's when your mind is at its sharpest. That's when you're most revived. But when you eat at night, if you eat within 3 hours of going to sleep, the food is, on all probability, still in your stomach. So the body doesn't know what to do. It's getting mixed signals. You're tired. It's time to sleep. Your biological clock, your circadian rhythms are saying sleep time. And yet, you've put a sugar, a caffeine, a food, carbohydrate in your body. You put a fat, and it doesn't know what to do. So you get only partial digestion. Just remember this. If you eat a meal late at night, it's still going to be there in the stomach in the morning. That's really bad. Now add into the idea that that's also going to cause an enzyme in your skin that would protect you from the sun, the ultraviolet rays, to be deactivated substantially, which means you're going to be more susceptible to sunburn than damage to your skin if you eat at night. So that's something important, again, something new, something that we can now take advantage of. Now, let me add something else on this that could protect your skin even more. It has been my experience that by taking certain antioxidants before you go into the sun, and then when you return from the sun, you can substantially reduce sunburn and damage to your skin. I would suggest 1,000 to 2,000 milligrams of quality vitamin C, 1,000 to 2,000 milligrams of quercetin, and in the neighborhood of, let's say, 1 cayenne capsule at about 40,000 heat units. That increases your microcirculation to your skin. It protects your skin because it's flooding the body with antioxidants, and especially, I miss one, R-alpha-lipoic acid, lipoic, L-I-P-O-C, lipoic acid, 600 milligrams. That works inside the cell and outside the cell. Most antioxidants only work outside the cell in the bloodstream. This works inside the cell. So as the sun hits your skin and you see that red is blood vessels. It helps to protect the free radicals that are created with that ultraviolet radiation trapping them. Hence, you don't get that sunburn and you don't have that damage. So protect your skin, keep it younger, healthier, more supple, resilient, longer. Those three nutrients before you go in the sun and when you come out. Now, short-term fish oil helps prevent diabetes type 2 in people with existing metabolic syndrome. Well, that means people with heart disease, people who are overweight, people who've had a stroke. And here's what it says. It says, according to the Chongqing Medical University in Singapore, fish oil, let's say 1,000 to 1,500 milligrams, can increase insulin sensitivity and reduce the risk of diabetes among metabolic disorder sufferers. And this was reviewing 17 major studies to come up with these results. So that's good. So I believe we should be taking fish oil anyhow every day. I would suggest either fish oil, 2 capsules, and always take at the same time coenzyme Q10 or ubiquinol, and always take curcumin or the curcuminoids at the same time. Why? Because science has now shown, and this hasn't been revealed to the general public yet, but it's in the literature, that when you take one of the most healing nutrients in the world, curcumin, if you take it at the same time you take the fish oil acts as a carrier, so you get much greater bioavailability, meaning you're going to use more at your cellular level. So you want to use as much as you can. So remember, curcumin and essential fatty acids at the same time. And also coenzyme Q10 or ubiquinol. And you can help, by the way, it's one of the best nutrients, thousands of articles on what it does to prevent cancer. If you have cancer, how to keep it from spreading, helping with your heart, your arteries, your brain, turning off inflammation, turning off pain in your joints, fibromyalgia, arthritis in your lungs, in your liver. So all that's important. That's all good. Now I'm going to jump over now and show you how this ties together with a question from one of the people who were there last night. And by the way, if you were there last night, in the film, I'm showing some recipes of what a great vegan dish looks like. And these vegan dishes are gourmet. I mean, they're top of the top. They're what you would expect in a gourmet or Epicure magazine. And they're not difficult to make. And if you want to support our sister station, WBAI, they have some more books that they're purchasing to give you for you to help the station. And this is from Andrea Katz, and she said, quote, many of the people last night asked about the recipe vegan cookbook that you referred to, The Healthy Recipes. So we placed it on the homepage of give to, the numeral 2, WBI.org. And so if you go to give to WBI.org, you can get the cookbook. All right? Helps the station, helps you. So now I'm going to answer now a question, two questions, about the man who said that he had been doing everything wrong. How long he had been doing it wrong is a very important question. So I don't know that. He didn't state. But he wants to help himself because he really needs to detoxify the liver. It's not merely the liver you need to detoxify. It's your whole body. Here's what you have to understand. By breathing in paints, any kind of paint, even as a hobbyist or as a house painter, you're bringing in very volatile chemicals into your body. And these also are hormone disruptors. And that means they can disrupt the amount of hormone and quality of the hormones, such as free testosterone in a man, or pregnenolone or estrogen in a woman. And therefore, you have hormone imbalance. And it doesn't mean that you're at perimenopause, menopause, or postmenopause. This is just what happens with environmental toxins. Now, that means that you've got to do a whole makeover, A to Z, in the body. And I start everyone with just a basic first step. The first step is relatively easy. You say that you're using or have used meat and are still eating meat. You're just not drinking anymore. Every drink you have of any hard alcohol destroys about a million liver cells, kidney cells, brain cells, and heart cells. So we have to imagine that you are substantially older biologically than your chronological age. How much, we don't know. There is a way of determining it. There's actually a DNA test that you can take where they take a sample of your DNA, and that tells you how old you are. Remember, it's not your chronological age that determines your death. It's your biological age. Last night, some of you may have seen two very charming women who came up to give a testimonial about the film. We had about 50 giving testimonials, and I had to get back to my lecture, which was a lot of fun, by the way. And the people were just terrific. And they were twins. Now, I had only seen one. She had been at a retreat, and they just said that they got a protocol for their mom, and the mom is not only doing good, she is doing great. And they wanted to come on today's show. I said, I don't have time today because we're just packed. However, one of the upcoming programs, you'll hear from them. I would look at them and say, maybe they're in their early 40s. No, they're 70s. And their mom, 101 or 103, what was 101 or 103? It was noisy. And they said, their mom's going great. Reversed her diseases of aging from these protocols I gave them, and is now either 101, 103. Could you imagine that? That's because of the chronological age is under the biological age, meaning she's younger. You're doing the right thing. You de-age. You repair damage to your DNA. You turn off inflammation in the brain and your joints, so you're no longer in pain. Your brain is starting to recalibrate itself. There's great capacity for the brain to renew and rejuvenate. So we heard from them. Anyhow, they were there. So the idea is that this fella's probably, again, this is just a guess, probably double biologically his chronological age. So if he was 50, he's really 100. So he's really getting up there. So that's what's confusing. I'm 40 years old, Gary. So what's the deal? No, you're 40 years old if you did everything right. But what if you did things you shouldn't have, ate or drank or breathed things you shouldn't have had? Then you're not 40. You're much older than that. So the first thing to realize is you got to stop everything that is causing inflammation, any toxins. Go to a very pure diet, lots of raw food, and for the first month, it's raw food and juicing. Start with one glass of green juice per day for the first week, two the second week, three the third week, and four the fourth week, 16 ounces. I always start everyone with the same detoxification. I don't care what your disease, this benefits you. You start with 16 ounces. Your base is cucumber, detoxer, celery, big detoxifier of the kidneys and the liver and the blood, and green apple. Then I add 2 ounces of ginger and lemon juice, 1 ounce of apple cider vinegar, and 1 tablespoon, or about 3 ounces, of chlorophyll powder. And that's what you drink once a day for the first week, twice a day for the second week, 3 times, third, and for the fourth. Then you start going towards watermelon, and if it has seeds, all the better, and bring in grapefruit, watermelon, grapefruit, and lime juice, 1 a day. Then apple skins, the skin of 5 apples, with some about 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C, coconut water, and potassium. And you put that into a smoothie with plant-based proteins, about 25 grams of quality plant-based protein, hemp, soy, non-GMO soy, rice. So that's what you do to get yourself started on a good detox. And you can have lentils. You can have sprouts, all the sprouts you want, sunflower sprouts, daikon sprouts, and get as many sprouts, living foods. We want to get living foods in the body to detoxify. So that's how you get started. I'll give you a part 2 in a month from now. So whoever this person is, you know who you are, you'll email me at prnstudio@gmail.com in about 4 weeks. Tell me how you're doing, how you feel, and then we'll go to part 2. Now, also in here, there is a question of what was the, let's see, with all the new research on the benefits of coffee, what are your thoughts about drinking modest amounts of organic coffee? Well, as it turns out, I have a little more knowledge than that about coffee. My first doctoral thesis was on caffeinism. I did that over a 2-year period at the Institute of Applied Biology, where I was a research fellow. And I found more than 200 studies in the scientific literature, 200 studies in scientific literature about the dangers of caffeine. But not just that, it's what happens when it's boiled. In the boiling process, you change certain chemicals that are in the organic coffee bean into something that becomes toxic. Also, just a few things. Coffee, I don't care if it's organic or non-organic, is got a lot of caffeine in it. Caffeine, at the amounts we're consuming in the American diet, is extremely dangerous to our nervous system. It creates a excitotoxic reaction in the central nervous system in the brain. It also helps exhaust the adrenal glands. In addition to that, try going off coffee, even organic coffee, and you end up with massive migraine headaches for about a week. It's also a diuretic. So when you're taking supplements like selenium, a micronutrient very important to prevent cancer and DNA damage, it flushes out of the body. It can also flush out calcium, zinc. Well, in order to create hydrochloric acid in the stomach, you need zinc. Well, how is it that if you need something, it's flushing it out? So there's a lot wrong with coffee. However, there is merit, a great deal of merit, in consuming the raw organic coffee bean, especially the green coffee bean. It has a very high ORAC. ORAC is a measurement of the antioxidants. So now you can find supplements, various companies are doing it, made from the organic green coffee bean. That's fine. Two different issues. Okay? So that's answering a couple questions. I'll be answering a few each day. That's our health nutrition segment. And we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back and then take on some hard-hitting issues. Please stay with us.
We got it together, didn't we? We've definitely got our thing together, don't we, baby? Isn't that nice? I mean, really, when you really sit and think about it, isn't it really, really nice? I can easily feel myself slipping more and more waves. That super world of my own. Nobody but you and me. We've got it together, baby.
We'll be doing some discoing in the fall. I'm going to be renting a space for our listeners to come and just celebrate life, dancing. I'll let you know when that happens, when we have a place. Now, I want you to hear from a person that we filmed, Dr. Gabor Mate, about what is normal, because we all have our ideas about normal. And a lot of people go out of their way to try to be normal. And some people want never to be normal. Let's hear his perspective.
One of the talks that I give is entitled The Myth of Normal, which is to say that we think that there are people who are normal over here. And then there's the pathological ones who have depression or anxiety or addiction or schizophrenia or bipolar disorder, or any number of other, ADHD, or any number of other conditions. What I see is a continuum, that we're all on a continuum. These traits, to one degree or another, are present in almost everybody. And it's a mythology to think that there's the normal and then there's the abnormal. Well, according to the research, the best place to be a schizophrenic in the world is not North America with all its pharmacopoeia. It's actually a village in Africa or India where there's acceptance, where people make room for your differentness, where connection is not broken but is maintained, where you're not excluded and ostracized but where you're welcomed, and when there's room for you to act out whatever you need to act out or to express whatever you need to express. And the whole community might even sing with you or chant with you or hold ceremony with you. And maybe find some meaning in your quote-unquote craziness. So it's contextual and it's cultural. So disease is not an isolated phenomenon of an individual. It's a it's a culturally manufactured, or culturally constructed paradigm. So a society that cuts us off from our spirituality, that cuts us off from society by idealizing individualism and by destroying social contexts, which our society does, which ignores our emotional needs, is going to be a society that generates pathology. And I think that has to do with the very nature of the economic system that says that what matters is not who you are, but how you are valued by others. And our society values people for material. It's a materialistic society, which specifically means that what we value is not who people are, but what they produce or what they consume. And the people that neither consume nor produce, they're ostracized, they're shunted aside, and they're totally devalued. hence the rejection of old people, because they no longer produce, and they're not rich enough to consume a lot either. So the very nature of this materialistic society dictates or generates and promotes that separation from ourselves. There is an intelligence, and I'm not speaking about a operative creature up there or out there somewhere doing things and deciding things, but there's an intelligence in nature and creation that if we ignore, we create suffering for ourselves and other people. And aligning with that intelligence and aligning with that connection is really what, whether we do so consciously or whether we do so because we're called to do that in ways that manifest compassion and connection and love, that's the way we're meant to be. And so the recognizing that and the striving for it is what I call spirituality. The paths are many. Some find it through religion. Sometimes religion is an obstacle to that. In fact, often it is. But it may be a conduit to it as well, depending on who and how and where. It's what people are seeking. Many other paths that are not religious, but fundamentally, there's this spiritual nature that if we ignore, we're actually ignoring an essential part of ourselves.
Something important. Just imagine, as you're growing older, you go through chapters in your life, and you're not always allowed to make a transition with people who can help you understand what lessons you've learned, what you need to prepare yourself for, what lies ahead of you. They've been there. They understand that. You don't. In our society, we don't have points of transition. We don't have wise people guiding us to the next stage of our existence. We're told, just wake up tomorrow and, you know, get on with it. And people are not prepared for their changes, especially if they were working all their life. Now they're not working. They may have had something they don't have. They were in relationships that are no longer there. This sense of finiteness scares us. The sense of ending things terrifies us. We're not having open and honest dialogue of what it means to see the expiration date on everything. And if you're told each day, if you opened up your computer, if every millennial opened up their computer and it said, you only have this amount of time to live, you will be suffering from these diseases based upon these parameters that you've engaged in, you will be suffering. And in effect, you were given an opportunity to see what's ahead of you. Would you change? Would you not change? We're not having those dialogues because we don't want people to tell us something we're not willing to do. It was Fritz Perl, the father of Gestalt, who said, a fear of knowing is a fear of doing. So if we don't want to do something, we're not going to be open to it. Last night, I discussed something that I hope people really understood, and that is, I was giving an example that and I was using the case of AIDS, and the example was that if someone who spent over 15,000 to 20,000 hours working with people with AIDS, I devoted an entire tri-state healing center, and on the weekends, the African American population brought themselves from early morning till midnight, and I was there 7 days a week, working with them, and our medical team, our nurses were there. Other conditions, like cancer and heart disease and other conditions, were treated during the day. But the gay community wanted to have their own support system at night, so that's what we did. And what was remarkable was that we were able to reverse full-blown AIDS in a group that decided to be on a fast track. And the fast track was you'd have to be there 6 days a week for 4 hours a day because we were getting very high intravenous vitamin C and other nutrients, and they had to drink drinks every hour. It takes 4 hours to do this. But of the 1,200 people I was working with full-blown AIDS, 12 said yes. All 12 were cured by any standard. We had blood workups done every single week so we could show every single person what was happening. These are like $2,000 blood workups each time, all right? I paid for all this. They never paid a nickel, because most of them were destitute. And during this period of time, what was interesting, just show you the racism in our society. Stokely Carmichael came in, and I knew him, and he had referred people, and I'd helped them, and later he would refer himself because he had a terminal illness. The trouble was he never took the therapy. He wanted to go to Africa first to do business and come back, and I said, do it now. Stokely, let me help you now. It'll take about 3 months. No, I don't have the time now, but when I come back, he never came back. But he was there. Arthur Ashe was there. Bill Tatum, the publisher of the Amsterdam News, was there. Leading members of the medical community who were African-American and from Harlem were there. Every day, you'd walk in, you'd see people sitting there talking with one another, getting the latest articles. We'd have people come in and do a lecture one night, for example, on why not to allow stress into this equation, because stress in and of itself can destroy your immune system. In any case, finally one day, I get a call from Tony Brown at Tony Brown's Journal, and he said, I hear you're doing some good work with AIDS over there and some of the brothers. I said, yes. Can I send someone over and take a look? Yes. Well, next thing you know, there's some people there looking at medical records with the patient's permission and talking with the patients, not just a short, superficial, I mean, like day after day. I mean, Arthur Ashe must have come 15 times over there. So anyhow, he then says, we have the proof. You've done something. And he said, Gary, I don't know how PBS is going to handle this, but I'm going to insist. And he was the number one person on PBS in America. He had the most syndicated show, and it was mainly to an African-American audience. 417 stations. And he had me on with the people who had been cured. So, and this was over a 2.5-year period. And we have this, these videos, you can see them at PBS and see these people with their medical records and everything. You think that that should have gotten out to the community. You think the New York Times, someone should have come. Someone. No one. Press conference, no one came. A whole day of on AIDS from scientists around the world who came showing natural treatments, no one came. But the African-American community came, and they were aware. They were communicating. And they invited me to the Apollo Theater. It was packed every day for a week. The Nation of Islam were there doing this honor guard thing, and the black doctors were there, and Arthur Ashe was there. They were all there. Bill Tatum was there. So it was the word in the African-American community. A, we didn't cause this disease, so stop blaming us. And B, stop using Hull Hospital to convince the world that every black woman should be tested for HIV when she's pregnant, because that's a drug addict hospital and you're not looking at other hospitals. So we were defending the African-American community, and not a word of that, not a syllable got out. That was not unintentional. That was dehumanizing the African-American community as if it were so irrelevant it didn't exist. That's racism within science. And yet, if you were there and spoke with these people, you would have seen. Why? Why didn't this get out? Because what I said last night, you have two paradigms. One is the dominant paradigm. The dominant paradigm is the AMA, the state medical boards. They're not there to make medicine better. They're there to protect the existing status quo. So no renegade, no Gary Null or anyone else comes in with an idea that could in any way threaten the pharmaceutical profits and the base of how a paradigm is done. And so they're dominant. And when you have one dominant energy, all other energies, no matter what truth they live by, are collapsed into a void. And then they're buried. They're denigrated, and then they're desecrated. So they're irrelevant. So nobody wants to taint them. Oh, you mean you're that person who believes in this or that or the other? And yet, if anyone ever in media were honest, and they're not, they would say, well, isn't the number one cause of death in America iatrogenesis or medically induced? Aren't you killing more people every year than heart disease or cancer or stroke or diabetes? Yeah. Well, shouldn't you change? No. Shouldn't you at least have a meeting on it since it's been published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, iatrogenesis? No. Shouldn't you change the way you're looking at disease and the methods you're using? No. Now go to banking, same way. Go to fossil fuels, same way. Go to our educational system. Every institution works in the same way. A dominant energy dictates the truth. All other people are considered without truth, and hence without merit, and hence you can demonize them. They demonize Gaddafi. They demonize anyone that they believe is a threat to the status quo. The same principle works of dominant energy in everything. Why do you think when they want to attack a country for regime change, they first have to demonize the country, the leaders, so people say, oh, okay, I guess they deserve to be nuked or genocide. The Germans did it to the Jews and the Gypsies and the communists. Franco in Greece did it to the communists and the socialists. And now we're doing it to one another. So the principle exists. Now in the studio with me now is a scholar in residence and our executive producer, Richard Gale. Nice to have you with us, Richard.
Hey, Gary.
Richard, I want to take the same principle. I want to take this principle to what's happening now. I introduced the show saying, yeah, we've got some crazy-ass people in this country. We've got racists. We have anti-Semites. We have bigots. We have people who are never going to change, but they're not the normal average, or they're not their average person. We have 330 million people. Why are you focusing on this small group as if it's the only issue that you should be focusing on? And then you over-focus on it, and then you create this culture of clashing, and then we begin spectators looking at who's clashing, who's fighting, and the lack of legitimacy in those people. The more you pay attention to them, they love this. Are you kidding? The Ku Klux Klan loves when, you know, they march through Stokely and the ACLU is there to defend their right to march, and then people yell and scream at them. They love any attention you can give them, right? Yeah, the more attention you give them, the more power they feel. All, you know, what, 3,500 of them in a country of 330 million. Here's what's not being dealt with. And this is my concern. When you're dealing with these issues, here's what you're not dealing with. And I'd like for you to address this. And especially the liberal community is not addressing this. Or let's put it, the liberal Clinton corporate Democrat community, to make it more specific. With the economy, they have not challenged NAFTA, nor GATT, nor the World Trade Organization, nor the loans from the World Bank, nor the International Monetary Fund, which are used to cripple and corrupt countries around the world. They are not. They have not attempted to repeal the Glass-Steagall Act. They have largely been responsible for the TARP payments to big banks, so they all lined up to support the big banks without taking them through bankruptcy, and then firing the people responsible for that debacle, which took $16 trillion out of our economy. They also failed to introduce legislation that would have reversed the power of Citizens United, which allowed all these corporations in there. They did no effort to really change our banking system. They allowed lobbying to continue. They enable conservative deregulation of the Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act, gas hydrofracking. They allowed monopolistic practices and industries to consolidate themselves. In the military, they increase the budgets consistently, and yet there is a graveyard of military aircraft in Arizona that is huge. It is, you could put 1,000 football fields there, all with planes. Most of those planes never went into the air, not once. And this is redundancy. We found we had 10 agencies within the Pentagon all ordering the same product from different contractors, and no one stopped it because of the lobbying of former people who were top up in that. They're not changing the corruption, and yet they don't have a penny to put into de-ghettoizing America and creating better schools and making education free and healthcare free. And yet there was no congressional outrage nor investigation into our illegal, immoral war on Gaddafi and his innocent people, or in Ukraine, or in Honduras in the regime change. And there has been no effort to help the Palestinian people gain some sense of sovereignty and rights. And yet now they're Chuck Schumer, who's a top man in the Senate, is a Democrat. He wants to make it against the law if you boycott Israel or say anything bad about them. And they have not gone after AIPAC. They have not gone after any of these other groups. So just take those as examples. Now, I've got 3 pages of things that they haven't gone after. They haven't done anything about our making United Healthcare, meaning one And by the way, I proved it on the show. We did the numbers. You and I said we went through government's own official figures and showed $1,950,000,000,000 would be saved every year if we went to universal health care. Plus, we would have less people dying, more people getting preventative care, and take profit out of medicine. We give doctors free medical education and nurses free education. In return, they would get a living wage at the normal wage of $200,000 a year with no debt. In return, they couldn't go out and do these unnecessary surgeries, no more medical overprescribing. You would take the profit out of it and make it a public service, helping the doctor, the nurse, and the citizens. And so people say, well, we couldn't afford it. Yes, you can, without raising a penny. We have the money, and they're not doing a damn thing about it. So take it from there, please.
Listening to you reflects on something someone I just learned about over this weekend. I didn't know of this individual. I don't even think Paul Krugman or Stiglitz would even know of this economist. His name was Leopold Kohr. And he was an Austrian economist, escaped the Nazis. He eventually went to the London School of Economics and settled in the United States. And he wrote a book in 1957 called The Breakdown of Nations. And almost everything that you were mentioning, when we mentioned about, you know, we're talking, the big word is bigness. We talk about big ag, big military, big banks, big oil, big pharma. And his whole theory was that it has nothing to do whether a country is a communist, they're communist or socialist or capitalist, they're Maoist, they're a monarchy, because all of those things could be manageable in a human scale. But when they become big, what happens with bigness? Bigness ends up, it leads to more control, power going to the top. You have a dominant model because you have more to manage. The bigger you are, the more management is required. As you have more management, you have more instability. You have more chaos, which then in turn requires more management again and more bigness. His whole argument was that if you look at smaller nations, if they were given the freedom to develop upon their own without American interference, like in so many countries. But when you look at Bhutan or Costa Rica or Singapore, which have been basically, or Switzerland, Luxembourg. These are countries where there's more flexibility. They've always been able to weather economic storms. They are not capable or are less than capable of engaging in wars. These are more peaceful nations. They're more prosperous. They're more creative. The populations are happier than what you find in larger powers. And so whenever there's too much bigness, there's an unraveling. So when we look at the progressive and distinguish between the Democrats or the New Democrats, the corporate Democrats who want bigness as far as more government, or the Republicans and GOP, which want bigness by outsourcing to the big firms and the big private interests. When you look at all these different little revolutions that we have going on, against the Federal Reserve, CDC, FDA, the Koch brothers, Google, Facebook, Amazon, Whole Foods, the fossil fuel polluters, the entire infrastructure that's promoting the pro-Israel apartheid, the military-industrial complex that's getting the biggest stock returns now, the World Bank, IMF, World Trade Organization, the bigness of the war on terror, which is now just not between a couple of countries, it's global, it's around the globe, the bigness of the Patriot Act, it's all big, and when you look at the progressive attacks of movement, we are attacking bigness. All of these are related to bigness. And there's the desire, when we look at what the progressive causes are, we're looking at let's go back down to human scale. That's why we speak of local food movement. We talk about community building, grassroots. This is a return to the smallness, okay, and the simplicity, as opposed to the bureaucracy, chaos, instability, power control of influence, of bigness. So that's my take on this whole situation from almost a philosophical but economic point of view as well.
It also leads into what I was suggesting, that you have to have, you don't have to have, but we have only accepted one dominant power. We have two parties that are both joined at the hip by the people who are the big financiers. They give to both politicians. They don't really care who wins an election. They may prefer one another, but they, in the end, they know that their lobbyists, their generals, their corporate CEOs are going to be going into that government and controlling it. Right now, for example, you have five former generals who should not be in civilian positions and are dictating our foreign policy. All right, and they see everything from a militarist point of view. Now, our guest is available, but I'm going to re-invite him because there's not enough time. We just found out he just became available. So we're going to have our guest on later this week, and you'll hear from Dr. Trita Parsi a little later on, because that's another problem. He's going to tell us about why we have demonized and made the so-called axis of evil Iran. What would happen if instead it were just the opposite? What if the Iranian people were able to, who are highly educated, are very intelligent, a lot of young people there. It's not a pure theocracy. There is at least some progressive and democratic movement there. What if we were able to work with them to establish peace in the Middle East, to establish prosperity in the Middle East, to stop the threat of terrorism in the Middle East? But we're not even looking at that as an option. We're looking at that, and what do we got to do? How do we got to deal with them? Well, let's take out North Korea, and then we can take them out. Do you think it was by accident that the CIA, the National Security Agency, and the Mossad, Israel, went in and planted that malware in their system and caused centrifuges, which have never been proven to be for nuclear arms, to explode? But they had another, without our knowledge, without the United States, the CIA, and National Security Agency, Israel had a virus in there that would turn off all their electricity. Okay, why would you want to turn off the electricity in a country? Well, first, forget what it would do in hospitals and heart-lung machines, and when the temperature gets up, two of the hottest days on record were in Iran the last 6 months. But you could fly your planes from Israel and they'd drop a nuclear reactor or nuclear bomb on their reactors and anything else you wanted to destroy and get back, and you wouldn't lose a single pilot. We're not looking at how we can be at peace with people in the world, how we can cooperate. Yeah. We're looking at how we can dominate. And that's that bigness. 900 military bases is big. You know, foreign policy says our hegemony is what's going to rule. So now take a look from that perspective you just showed us, and take a look at our medical industrial complex.
It's all of our agencies, every one of them. It's all related to big. It is
in our food.
And Iran is deemed. If Iran was the size of Jordan, do you really think that we would be saber rattling as much as we were? No. So Iran's the largest, geographically, it's the largest country in the Middle East.
And one of the most populous.
And most populous.
Over 80 million
right.
people.
It's big.
Yeah.
And it goes, and of course, Israel may be small, but it's big through its influence. It's big through its banking regime. It's big through
has a larger military-industrial complex than Saudi
right,
Arabia.
Through, right. So, and as when we speak about Iran, it's also Iranians have just really always have wanted, Israel joined open up your reactors to international inspectors. I mean, why won't you do that? Or join the non-proliferation treaty. Iran's always been willing to comply with a lot of these international, from the international community, which it recognizes. I mean, it doesn't recognize perhaps the hegemonic voice of sovereign nations like the United States, which want to overpower international treaties, international consensus. We feel we have the hubris to feel like we are bigger than them. But again, we're going back to the words big.
we're out of time. Let's just put this in perspective. This is a continuation that we will have of this conversation. We are suggesting this, very simply, that with all the important issues with global warming, and we're going to get to that tomorrow, where we just discovered, and we just posted it up on our Facebook today, on the personal Facebook, on GaryNoll.com, how many volcanoes were now discovered under Antarctica? Active volcanoes?
91
volcanoes. My goodness. Do you realize how that changed the calculus of how quickly that whole continent can melt because it's melting on top? There are lakes in between melting on the bottom. So we could be seeing some major events that no one predicted in any mathematical model. We're not talking about this. We're not talking about how Miami's becoming unlivable. We're not talking about how to ghettoize the major cities and how to rebuild schools. We're not talking about why we had 58,000 factories closed from 2000 to now. 58,000 factories, Republican and Democratic administrations, so-called populist presidents, closed these knowing it would cause massive unemployment, cause a loss of union labor, and cause people not to no longer have a living wage so they could have disposable income where people didn't have to work two jobs. This was done with malice. This was done with forethought. They knew what they were doing. And we're not talking about it. We're not trying to reverse it. Instead, we are pitched in this battle between those contemptible racists and those who are compelled to fight them. Okay, but let us now not forget what's actually going to save us, our community, our health, and that's not it. Mm-hmm. All right? What's going to save us is when we put all of our energy collectively onto addressing these important issues. And boy, do we lose our sight of what's important real quick. I'm Gary Noll. That's Richard Gale. Our guests will be later this week, and we will be back tomorrow addressing more of the issues that need to be addressed. Have a nice day, everyone.
Your heart, you seem so